It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal: to help you score more fantasy points.
Edition of the Matchup Podcast here at FantasyPoints.com. That was a mouthful. I'm John Hansen, Greg Cosell standing by. This podcast, per usual, and this is the final one for the 2021 season. Just a sample of the insight we get from Greg Cosell's film study. Greg, the finale, it's bittersweet. Actually, it's actually quite sweet. But how are you?
Well, I'm wiping a tear away from my eye, John.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Yeah. I'll give you a moment to compose yourself and remind people that we'll continue to produce the content throughout the playoffs. You can still subscribe to the website. 30% discount going on right now at fantasypoints.com. All the wildcard, divisional, championship, Super Bowl, props, DFS, game analysis, you name it. All right, Greg, we have some of your notes coming out of week 17. Got to concentrate here, you know, with this week 18. You know, you got to really think. Last week was 17. We're still not done yet.
No, we're in week 18. As a regular season, you know, we've never said that.
Yep. KCD, you saw here, Joe Burrow. We're not going to really talk Joe Burrow because he's probably not going to play. But where are you at right now with the KCD? Drew Locke seemingly played a little bit better last week. They cannot run the ball, though, right now in Denver. But what's up with the KCD?
I don't think the KCD did anything differently this week against the Bengals. I think what you see from them is you see man coverage. You see them play cover two. They still played some snaps of zero. They rely on their front, which, by the way, really did a good job against the Bengals front. I think we know what to expect from them, and I would expect them, and they play the early Saturday game, and it's a game they have to play to win, because if they win and Tennessee loses, they get the number one seed in a week off. So they will be playing, and I would expect them to, let's put it this way, if we're talking fantasy, I would not expect a lot of big numbers for the Broncos offense this week.
Yeah, Drew Locke in his last two games, not much. Two touchdowns total, 6 yards an attempt, 57% completion rate, two picks a game. So this defense is getting.
And, you know, Drew Locke, and I've been around Drew Locke, and I really like him. I've actually met his parents. He's really, really good family. But when I watch him, he has the same issue that I noticed and wrote about when he came out from Missouri. He tends to open up and drift to his left. And he ends up, when he does that, dropping his arm angle, throwing off balance. That's one reason why the accuracy and the ball placement tends to be a problem. So that's something that, and again, who knows what his future holds, so I'm not going to get into that. But if he were to really get a legit chance and have a chance to be somewhat of a quality NFL quarterback, that needs to be corrected, and it still hasn't been.
Yeah, it seems to be rare when a guy shows that in college and then continues to show it early on in the NFL career that it improves. How does he compare in terms of that to like a Josh Allen coming out, in terms of just being kind of a wild stallion needing to kind of settle in a little bit?
I mean, certainly Josh Allen, when he came out, John, as you know, there were legitimate questions about Josh Allen. He's far more physically gifted than Drew Locke, just from his size. Although Drew Locke does have good size and good arm strength, but Allen's a little freakish. Allen didn't need to be calmed down a bit. You know, with quarterbacks like Josh Allen, and I'm not a coach, so I'm not sure how coaches approach this, but I would imagine that you want to coach him and you want to make sure you get his mechanics as good as they can be because, hey, look, I don't care what people say, John. You know, you played sports when you were younger. You can't do anything consistently well when you're off balance.
Yeah.
You just can't.
So, well, you know, it's tough sometimes to figure out, like, who's going to be able to get to improve, because it seems like definitely Josh Allen's mechanics have tightened up for sure, and I haven't seen that with Drew Locke. But we can move on. Dak Prescott, his mechanics are seemingly the exact same all the time. Looks like a robot out there, but it's a weird year for Dak. It's like the Cowboys can't get it all together in the same year. One year the offense is great, defense is terrible. One year the defense is great, offense kind of terrible. Greg, we've been talking about it all year, last half of the year. Can't run the ball. You know, Dak, it seems once again the issues seem to be more mental.
Yeah, and I can't speak for what's in his head, but, you know, I think their O-line has really struggled in the run game. They've not been able to run the ball at all. I think Zeke does not have that same second-level reacceleration juice that he had earlier in the season and earlier in his career. So they've struggled to run the ball. I think Dak at times is not seeing things as clearly as he needs to. You notice he gets stuck in the pocket a little bit more now, where it just seems like he doesn't have a throw and then he has to move. So this offense right now, and again, it's not that I wouldn't say they're playing poorly. They obviously they won a number of games until they lost just this week. But I would bet that my sense is watching the tape, they're trying to find their way a little bit right now.
Yeah.
It's not really a consistent deal with what's going on there.
I know it's an overgeneralization, but is it fair to say that offensively, second half of the year, they're not really dictating to anybody what they're going to do? They're not running it with authority.
No.
They're not throwing it consistently, despite the talent level. They should be, you know, going out there, here's what we're going to do. We're going to execute. Now stop us. They're just not executing.
No, and I think that run game's really hurting them in that regard.
Yeah. You know what?
They can't run the ball.
Back to KC real quick, because I forgot to hit on Mahomes. Seems to be playing much better, much more calm. You still see some issues here, but where are we at with Mahomes? That's a
it's
big
not
win.
Per se, it's just different.
I mean,
I feel like the offense is different. You know, I did look up when I was finished watching that tape to see that they still are among the league leaders in 20-plus completions, so it's not as if they're lacking explosive plays, but watching the tape, their offense looks different. You know, Mahomes is certainly playing with a better sense of timing and rhythm. The ball comes out. It doesn't appear to be taking as many deep shots. There's clearly less improvisational movement. When he does move, it's far more calculated, which I think is good, whereas I thought earlier in the year, as we've discussed, I thought his movement was a little too random and undisciplined, where now it's much more calculated. But it just the pass game looks a little different to me.
I mean, is it, again, to be maybe over general here, but it sure seems like, you know, playing those two deep safeties, Mahomes did a lot of those big plays, second reaction, scramble drill types. Those have kind of dried up. It's forced him within the season almost to evolve and become boring, basically.
Well, yeah, but I know what you mean. I think in the long term, this will help him. And by the way,
oh sure,
the numbers are good. I mean, that's what struck me. The only number that's down, and it's a meaningful number, and in fact, it's used by a lot of people in the league as a really meaningful barometer as to the success of a pass game. He's down by about a yard in yards per attempt.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's a meaningful number.
It is. Yep, I read your notes, and I guessed to myself what he was averaging going into this year and what he's averaging this year, and I was pretty close.
Put the number down. This year it's 7.4, and in his three previous years, he was well over 8.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guessed 8.2, and I guess this year it was 7.2, but, you know, close.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But overall, playing pretty well.
You know, yeah, no, he's not playing poorly, no. It's
yeah.
just a different-looking offense.
Yeah. 49er offense, and, you know, based on what you saw out of Trey Lance, this was a, you know, decent litmus test, you know, with 2+ months passed since that last start. Let me ask you this way, if you were Kyle Shanahan, you could start either guy, Jimmy or Trey, in the playoffs, or this week even, this is the playoffs, basically, who would you want to go with?
You know, that's a hard question. I mean, look, Kyle Shanahan clearly believes that Jimmy Garoppolo can execute his offense with more consistency right now.
Yeah.
Now, I know people listening will say, oh, but Trey Lance gives you so much more. And he does athletically and with his arm. Although when people talk about that touchdown he threw to Samuel, John, as if, oh, my God, oh, Trey Lance, Garoppolo could never do that. That's a staple shot play for them. Garoppolo's made that throw 5 times in the last
year. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that play. And in fact, as soon as I saw it on TV, I knew exactly what play it was, you know, because I've seen it. And Garoppolo's made that throw. Does the ball get there with more juice from Lance? Yes, but Garoppolo's made that throw. And then a number of the other throws Garoppolo's made as well. I saw this piece, and I forget who wrote it, he took staple throws in the 49er offense, okay, and broke them down in a written piece on the internet, acting as if these throws were throws only Trey Lance could make, when in fact they're staple throws in the 49er offense.
Oh, sure, sure. Time. So if you're going to be a Shanahan purist, you would say Jimmy G is the guy you would want to roll with.
Jimmy G will start if he can go. Now, we don't know that. Apparently, we're doing this on a Wednesday evening, John, this conversation you and I are having right now. And I know that Garoppolo threw some today. Whatever that means, because the press is not allowed to see the whole deal, whatever that means, none of us know. But he threw some today.
Yeah, I think, too, we're asking a lot of Trey Lance to even be in this conversation, but he's just so physically gifted. I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, Shanahan's offense, his skill set, just throw him on out there, design some plays, they'll be open.
I will add this. Sorry to interrupt, but I will add this. There's no question that Shanahan had far more confidence this time than he had in Lance
uh-huh.
five or six when he started against Arizona.
There you go.
This time they ran the offense much more the way Shanahan wants it. When he played, as you recall, back week six, I think it was?
Five. I think it was five.
Five. Whatever it was against Arizona. They had a ton of design runs.
Oh, God, yeah. It was ridiculous. It was like high school.
It tells you that he didn't feel comfortable with him running the pass game.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there you go. I'm glad I asked it because, you know, that was essentially what I was asking. How much progress do you think Lance made?
I think he made a good amount. And I think he'll be the starter next year, you know, as you start preparing, which you're probably doing.
Oh, he'll be the guy. He'll be the guy, Greg, next year.
He'll be the guy next year without question.
The guy. No, I mean my guy, quarterback, that I'm drafting.
Right.
For fantasy. Like, consider that done with the upside. Rams offense here, Greg, as we look toward week 18, and they're in a meaningful game, obviously, against the 49ers here. And, I guess the weekly price check on Matt Stafford and where he's at, a little OBJ this week. Higby seemingly more involved the last couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, I mean, they got a lot of weapons, you know, and, you know, Stafford still made the first interception he threw this week. He'd have to explain that to me. I don't know, you know. I've never dropped back, so I don't know what he saw. But then he makes great throws. So, you know, certainly – they can score. I mean, his numbers from a fantasy perspective are really good, as you know. He's probably thrown a few more interceptions than Sean McVay would like, but he's certainly thrown a lot of touchdowns.
They get a little Cam Akers out there this week.
Apparently, he's going to go a little this week. I think Michelle has looked very good over the last month.
Yeah, that was my guy this summer, my big sleeper there, running back, and a little late, but he's good. Good fit for that offense there and a real good foundation in the running game. And Titan offense here, Greg, and Derrick Henry.
I don't know what to say about the Titans offense.
I was going to ask you about Deontay Foreman because he's looked pretty good the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he has. He has.
I mean, that's a nice little Derrick Henry backup plan now.
Yep. And when else, you know, look, they essentially are running, or this week they ran the exact same offense. You know, I think that Foreman, every run other than his 35-yard run, which was a direct snap, you know, the wildcat, so to speak, every run was a zone run. The only run that was gap scheme where they pulled a guard was the wildcat run. So they clearly focus on the zone run game. You know, Foreman looked good. He had a 21-yard touchdown run where he showed great patience and vision, allowing the blocks in front of him to develop, and they developed beautifully. You know, the big question, and I'm sure it's not a fantasy question because fantasy will be over, but we'll keep talking football, obviously, is whether the particular profile that they have now as a team can get you to a Super Bowl. Because essentially, look, they're going to get Derrick Henry back, so you know they're going to run the ball. That's a given. But can the run game and defense be enough to get you to a Super Bowl without more from their pass game? Because right now, as you know, other than against the Niners in the second half, where Tannehill was phenomenal on third down throwing to A.J. Brown. Other than that half of football, John, as you well know, this pass game has almost been non-existent.
So the question is, how much better can this passing game get when Derrick Henry returns? How much does Derrick Henry help? It'll give you more man-to-man, single coverage, whatever. How much can he help?
Well, and how much, the question to me, and again, they may not think this way, so I could be dead wrong. You know, I'm not one who thinks I know more than the coaches. But the question to me is, does everything have to function off the run game?
Yeah, because I think the answer is yes.
I always go back, and I know I've mentioned this to you. I always go back, and I, ever since I was told this by Bill Walsh, you know, back probably 30 years ago, I believed it. I learned from him, and I believe it. And he said that in any given game, your run game and your pass game must operate independently of one another. You never mm-hmm. Never know which game that's going to be, but if they have to work together to be successful, he said you're going to run into a game where that can't happen.
Yeah, that's a great point. And he always had sneaky good running games that could take over a game if need be.
Correct. But the point is, if for whatever reason Tennessee has to throw the ball, can they do it?
You know, exactly.
They have a drop back passing game that is does not come off the great play action element that Derrick Henry gives you.
I mean, at the end of the day, Greg, I mean, something has to be pointed at Robinson, the GM, for leaving the cupboard so bare at receiver. You know, I mean, they lose Johnny Smith and Corey Davis and replace them with the ghost of Julio Jones, basically. Not good. Moving on here.
Not quite the ghost of Tom Joe, though.
No, absolutely not. Dolphins offense here. And, you know, we're going to struggle all offseason with Tua, I'm sure. And we know what he is. But the question is, at some point, you know, I know it's still relatively early, but at some point, you know, probably sometime next year at the latest, honestly, I'm going to make some sort of definitive statement on this guy, Tua.
Here's the way I'd answer that. We've talked about Tua, so I won't go over it again. I'm hopeful that people listen to you and I speak regularly. So, you know, whether it's on this or with Adam Kaplan on the live stream Thursday nights or even Friday morning when I join you on Sirius. People know how I feel about Tua. And when I say know how I feel, it's not a negative or a positive. It's what the tape shows. Okay, so here's my question. And I think that's why the answer to Tua as a long-term starter remains up in the air.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
They need a run game.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think you can fairly evaluate Tua as whatever he is until there's a run game that's involved where they can line up and run the ball.
100%.
We know that Tua is not a big-time number one, take over a game. He's not that guy. He's a complementary piece who can be highly efficient. But if you're going to run that kind of offense, which is the offense you have to run with Tua, then you need a run game.
That's fair. And I was very critical of them for not investing more in that thing. And I also gave them some credit over the last 2 years for investing in the O-line. And here's the thing. The O-line hasn't worked out either. So
and they do have a number two pick at left tackle, a number one pick that they move from left tackle to left guard. You know, see, here's an example where, you know, people say you can get running backs anywhere and all that. I think to the Dolphins, a quality running back is important.
But Jonathan Taylor would have been huge, Greg.
What's that?
Jonathan Taylor would have been so huge.
Yeah. I mean, you know, every team is different, but I think for the Dolphins to be truly successful as an offense, they need a quality run game and therefore a quality running back. It doesn't mean you have to draft one, you know, at number seven in the draft, but you can't just, you know, pull street free agents off the street, you know, just because it's happened before and say, this is the way we want to go.
Yeah. And I bet you Miami took, here it is. They took Austin Jackson in that draft. I mean,
he was a first round pick from USC who was a very young kid, showed a lot of ability at left tackle at USC. They've now moved him to left guard.
That's not good.
And Liam Eikenberg, who I believe was a second round pick from Notre Dame. Is that correct?
Yeah.
He's starting at left tackle.
See, that's terrible. You could have taken Jonathan Taylor right after taking Tua right there. I mean, would have been.
And again, I mean, you know, I don't rip teams for that. Again,
yeah.
They didn't.
That's my job.
Yeah, that's your job. I'll let you do that.
Mr. After the Fact. But no, I actually said it at the time, doing draft broadcasts on Sirius that weekend, honestly. But we digress. And, you know, Drew Brees, by the way, had LaDainian Tomlinson. And then he went over to New Orleans and he had that first year, Deuce McAllister and Reggie Bush. So,
I think to be fair, you've got to give – it won't change what Tua is in terms right. of his skill set, but it would allow the offense overall to be far more efficient.
He's got to be in an environment that he – to thrive. You know, not a great second reaction guy, timing guy. You got to build a little wall around him, give him some protection, pick your spots, and, you know, hopefully he can pan out. But
to make defenses have to defend the run by their alignments, by the use of personnel – you have to do that. And right now, that's not a factor for them.
But that's when you look at a guy like Herbert. And it is kind of amazing to think that most people had Tua over Herbert. It is kind of amazing when you think about it, because Herbert is just like, he can run seemingly any system. He can play within structure, outside. He can do it all. It is kind of amazing now that you've seen these two play in the NFL. It is kind of nuts.
I know, but unfortunately, teams have to make these decisions, as we all do when we evaluate, before we see that.
Yeah, no.
You know how I felt about Tua even coming out. I mean, what I've said about Tua has been consistent even from, as you know, John, even from watching his Alabama team.
You know, I've always said that the idea of Tua seemingly is a lot better than the actual Tua, and that, you know, I'd love to say he's going to be great, but, you know, you got to put him in a really good spot. And if so, he can be. But if not, right. If Herbert's in a tough spot, he's so physically gifted, he could do so much. You know, he could probably scratch and claw. Tua could be in real trouble, basically. Eagle offense here. I saw your note on Jalen Hurts, and not that he's going to play this week, most likely. But it's a very simple point. But you know what? The guy didn't turn the ball over. He's like Russell Wilson in that regard.
No, I mean, and I think that's look. That raises another question, you know, the same question we spoke about with the Titans, a little differently with the Eagles. The Eagles don't throw the ball a lot, as you know. I mean, the numbers for Hurts are not, you know, are not off the charts by any means. Touchdowns are low, what, 16 or 17 maybe? Passing, I'm talking about. I know he's a fantasy bonanza as a runner, but we're talking about throwing the football. He, you know, he's only got 16 or 17, am I correct? Something like that?
Yeah, I think it's like 18, yeah.
All right.
I think I had him at 21.
What's that?
I had him projected for 21.
So they don't throw it a lot. They're run based. Obviously, he does make some really good third down throws. You know, so the thing is, because he'll miss some things, which he still does. The fact that he can then create yards with his legs, both by throwing and running, and the fact that he doesn't turn it over. Kind of compensate and camouflage the fact that he misses things. So the question is that a Super Bowl profile? You know, in other words, can you play this way on offense and get to a Super Bowl? And, you know, I don't know if there's – my guess is most people would say no, but I think there are a lot of ways to win in the NFL, and I think you can't dismiss it. If your run game is dominating, which theirs has predominantly been, and your defense is playing well, and theirs has. And again, you play who's on your schedule. The reality is they haven't played hardly any good opponents over the last 6 weeks. But so we'll see when they play better opponents. Look, in the first round of the playoffs, they're going to play either at the Rams or at Tampa.
Yeah.
More than likely. I guess it's a long shot they could play Arizona, but it's more than likely going to be the Rams or Tampa. Now, maybe their defense will be great and hold one of those teams to 17 points. But if they have to win 31-28, the question is, can they? Maybe they can. I'm not going to sit here and say they can't, John.
But no, I hear you. I mean, it's like when Peyton Manning's coming up, you're watching him progress, and you're like in year two, you're like, yeah, this guy's going to win a Super Bowl at some point. Right. You're not saying that about Jalen Hurts. But, you know, they could get hot and run, go on a run, boom, and win it.
And he's improved. You know, say what you want. Like I said, I can tell you what the tape shows, and he does miss things. And by the way, he may be that kind of quarterback. You know, Russell Wilson has always missed things. So Hurts may be that guy, but he's clearly improved. And that running element, both by design and scrambling, and the fact that he does not turn it over, those are really critical pieces.
Let me ask you a fascinating question. who's played better over the last month and a half, 2 months, Dak Prescott or Jalen Hurts?
I would say Hurts has been more consistent. Prescott's better. But, you know, if you're just going to say which quarterback, Prescott's better, but Hurts has clearly been more consistent over the last 2 months.
Well, and that's quite something still in and of itself, considering what Dak just got paid and where he is in the echelon of quarterbacks here.
I mean, my guess is that Hurts will be the Eagles quarterback going forward. I think they'd be really hard pressed now, having made the playoffs, to say that Jalen Hurts is not our quarterback.
Yeah. Well, I knew from the moment I was around him that the kid had amazing poise and presence about him. And even on that ridiculous episode at FedEx Field, where the stand fell down, he showed such calm and poise. And
no, I've never met him personally. I'm sure I will at some point, but you know, from everything I hear, he's a great leader. You know, guys really like him; they want to play for him. All that good stuff. Whatever.
Oh! I was only around him for 10 minutes, and it's so obvious. You know, it's like a 30-year-old guy.
Yeah, I don't. You know, again, that, you know, that could mean a lot of things to a lot of different people, but whatever it means, that's a good thing.
What's that? What I said, or?
Yeah, the fact that, you know, that he seems to be a leader and people want to be around him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I couldn't really speak totally to the leadership, but it's pretty obvious that the guy is a pretty outstanding young man. Of course, you know his history, too, you know, and all that. But anywho, Zach Wilson, quickly, you know, I have not buried this kid. I'm trying to stay as patient as I can, and I think we're seeing some progress.
I thought this was as good as I've seen him this week all season. I thought he was much more settled in the pocket, which means it slowed down a little bit. He was much more decisive with his reads and his throws. He still at times, of course, will show a tendency to play a little fast, you know, but he's still a rookie quarterback. But I thought that this was a real positive performance. I thought overall, and I put this in my notes and you probably read it, and I was trying to think of the best way to say it as I was starting to type it, and I think this speaks to it well. He played with more awareness and understanding of what can be done, what can't be done, and the game situation. And I thought that this was, and in the name of full confession, I've not seen every game of Zach Wilson this year. Maybe I've missed two. I thought of the games I've seen, this was his best performance, you know, just overall in playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, that shows that, you know, he can take the coaching and improve, put the work in, whatever he needs to do in the classroom. That's because it was kind of looking shaky right when he returned after Mike White and Johnson played a little bit. But
John, we spoke.
Yeah, it was not great.
Even as recently as 2-3 weeks ago, it looked like he didn't belong on the field.
But, you know, cleaning up all those things, polishing up the game, getting sure, you know, in the mentals, if you will, and all that, not playing so fast and all that. You know, if he, you know, in a year or two really, really pans out and, you know, puts out the tape that's like, okay, this kid's almost maxing out, you know, what he can do here. Like, what type of player would that be? Is there a comp that comes to mind? You know, he's 6'2". I mean, I don't.
He's a little slight.
Oh yeah, he's a little slight. I mean, I would think more Drew Brees before Aaron Rodgers, but
I mean, people, you know, I've talked about him when he came out, and even now, he's got a live, loose arm. He's got athletic feet.
Yeah, Stafford.
It's an interesting comparison. He's a little looser than Stafford in terms of moving out of the pocket. And Stafford, to me, has more of a power arm.
Yeah.
Wilson has a loose, live arm. And to me, there's a difference.
Yeah.
Maybe that's tough for people, you know, to understand. I don't know. But I know what I mean when I say that. I don't know.
Could he be a bigger, maybe a little bit more athletic Drew Brees?
Well, he has a better arm than Drew Brees.
With a better arm, yeah.
I mean, Wilson can snap it off pretty good.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, this. I'd be real curious. They play Buffalo this week, and it's a game Buffalo has to win. So Buffalo's going to play their people.
How about Kyler Murray?
What's that?
How about Kyler Murray for a comp?
No, I don't know. But the point is, this is a good final game for Wilson coming off this last game against the Bucs. And if he can play well this week, and you know, relatively speaking, then you'll feel good as a Jet organization going into the offseason that he clearly improved, and with another offseason, he's ready to take another step next year.
And I won't feel good about finding a good comp for him because it's not easy to do, no, honestly.
It's hard. Yeah. I mean, you're going to hear the – look, when he came out, a lot of the pundits said Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. I wasn't ready to say that.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's right. A little much.
Yeah, maybe a little Mahomesy.
I think I've decided, John, and this is a strong statement, but it's not meant to be bold or controversial, okay?
Okay.
I started working at NFL Films in 1979. That's a long time ago. I think that Aaron Rodgers could well be the best thrower of a football I've ever seen.
Oh, I think that's completely fair. I mean, and no drop-off either.
No.
That's the thing.
I mean, the guy's ridiculous. I every week I watch him, I run out of things in my head as I'm watching him. You know, I the guy's ridiculous.
I mean, what is more impressive, the arm strength, the placement, or just the timing, touch, and rhythm?
How about everything?
Yeah, exactly. It's all together. It's all one thing.
You know, he's one of those guys that when he misses a throw, you're like, wait a second, that really didn't just happen, did it? I mean, you know, changing the sport, I was a big Mets fan, just to give you an example of like when I watch Aaron Rodgers. Are you a baseball fan at all? Of course you are. So how old were you in 1985?
I was a junior in high school.
All right. So you remember the year Dwight Gooden had in 1985?
Absolutely. 19 years old.
Okay. Well, I was a huge Mets fan, and cable wasn't big then, but that was when they had WOR in New York, and literally almost every Met game was on WOR.
Bob Murphy here, easy day here, Chi.
Right. Bob Murphy, Lindsay Nelson, and Ralph Kiner. Exactly. And I'm only making this comparison. It might seem weird to people who are listening, but what the hell? You and I are just shooting the breeze. And that was the year when if somebody got a hit off Dwight Gooden, it was like, wait, somebody got a hit off Dwight Gooden? That just didn't happen, you know?
Yep.
And with Aaron Rodgers, it's like, oh, you mean he didn't make an unbelievable throw? I mean, he just makes so many. It's so routine. It's unbelievable. And there's such a calmness to the way he plays.
He's just out there throwing literally like me throwing darts. Like he owns that football like it's half its the size.
Yeah, I mean, he's truly, truly special as a thrower of the football. I mean, it's remarkable.
He probably is the most physically gifted thrower in history.
And he's not a huge man. You know,
he's 6'2". No, he's slight of build.
He's not like solid, you know, it's not like he's muscled up.
Nope.
No.
He is kind of like a Paul Bunyan in that way. He's like a we're starting to get some sort of legendary weird status with that in terms of that. But Greg, we'll leave you with my Bob Murphy impersonation of a call from 1980. Hazy day here at Shea, swing in a long drive, strawberries under it. He dropped the ball! Strawberry dropped the ball! I don't know if you remember that, but.
Yeah, I remember him when the Mets had Nolan Ryan, and he would, you know, and I would hear games on the radio because that was 1969 when not many games were on TV, you know, back in those days. And so I remember him with that. And then what I'll never forget, John, is I was 13 years old. It was 1969. That was the year the Mets won 35 of their last 42 to win the National League pennant.
Yeah.
To win the World Series. And I just remember Lindsay Nelson. I was coming back, believe it or not, with my dad from the library, which was around the corner from where I grew up. So we were walking back from the library, and we had the radio, you know, because we wanted to hear the end of the game.
Yeah.
And it was like a 7 o'clock start that night. But I had to do my homework. You know, that was important, you know, for my family, you know, with me growing up. And I just remember Lindsay Nelson going, at 9:07 on September 24th, at 9:07 on September when they won the pennant, at 9:07 on September 24th.
Well, in New York, you know, they would cancel school for stuff like that at times.
Right. Well, I was classic at getting sick the first day of baseball season when they were all day games. I was classic for that, John.
That's a great age to be for the Mets, you know. I was the exact same age. Would you say you were like 12?
I was 13. Well, 1969, because my birthday's in November, so I was 12 when the season started in 69.
Same here. My year for that was 81 with the Dodgers and Fernando, and they won the series that year. Not as quite as legendary as the 69 Mets, but kind of close. with Fernando.
Fernando for those 2 or 3 years was ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, Greg, that's a little stroll down MLB. We'll do a 80s MLB podcast in the offseason,
that's
maybe.
That's right.
You don't follow those Mets anymore, though. You lost it.
No, I mean, I look at baseball box scores, but I don't really, you know, I don't watch baseball a ton these days.
Yeah. My brother was a Mets fan.
I grew up a baseball fan because I played it, you know, so
I'm
a huge baseball fan.
My brother was a Mets fan. He's still suffering, but you were wise to get out. That'll wrap it up here. Thank you for listening to the Matchup Podcast all year. Stay subscribed to the feed and all that. We'll be talking with you plenty here in the offseason. For Greg Cosell, I'm John Hansen. Good luck if you're crazy enough to play in Week 18.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.